Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And this is Jason.
And this is episode 317, March Madness Round 1 Solo Games. We'd like to thank all of our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. All right, gentlemen, we are back, and we are back with the two solo gamers of solo gaming, Anthony and Jason from, or formerly from, Every Night is Game Night. Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening.
Yes, yes, that's us.
Lifetime ago, my God.
but you guys have been around for quite some time, and you guys put together a good chunk of episodes about the latest and greatest in solo gaming. And being that it's March Madness, and being that we do have to pay the sports gods their due, we do this every year, which is we take the best in gaming, we slap it together, we match it up, and then we make long-lasting, earth-shattering decisions on what is the best of the best. So for this March Madness crazy round one, we are talking about solo games. So again, not a solo gamer, but of course, like everything else, I'm solo gaming now. So Anthony and Jason will be battling it out and deciding which is the best of these games.
Gentlemen, you meant to say that Anthony and Jason were ahead of the curve.
Oh,
we were right. You know, we caught a lot of flack when we tried to post, and we got a little bit of like, well, scoreboard games are social and da da da. And now it's like, welcome to our world, son. Yeah.
What's up now?
Thank you.
The first time that Chris came on and reviewed a game that he played solo, which was like maybe 5-6 months ago, I legit looked at the spreadsheet before we started recording. I was like, are you messing with me? Is this happening? What's happening? Yeah, he made fun of me for years, yeah. This man.
It was a stigmatized activity. There was a lot of fun being made, a lot of references to self-pleasure that I did not appreciate. But as we, not from you, Chris, but from the interwebs, right? Because the interwebs, they don't care. So then we get into a pandemic, and then we have all these wonderful games in our shelves, and we have no idea what to do with them. And then all of a sudden, boom, solo goodness. So we're happy to have this year's March Madness themed along solo games.
I took this from something you're very familiar with, Jason, because you do this every year, the top 200 People's Choice solo games that the One Player Guild puts together. Kevin Erskine, you run this show every year, and I was on it for a few years. And that's what seeded this list. Obviously, there's not 200 games on the list we're going to talk about today, but that's where they came from, based on what I and us as a whole have played. So just want to give them their shout out. If you want to see more solo games, check out that list.
Well, you guys have both played plenty of them, and obviously, like you said, Jason, it's become a mainstay in board gaming right now. Obviously, every Kickstarter that's coming out now, there's either a solo gaming mode in it, or there's a ton of people asking about solo gaming in there. So, I mean, it's one of those good, bad news kind of situations with the lockdown that people have discovered that their games can play solo, or how many great solo games are out there in the industry. So it brings light to a great hobby, and a hobby that everyone can do. And that's not always true, right? We have so many games in our collection that never get a chance to get played. And, you know, if you can't get the group together or you don't have the right group together, this is a really great option for it. So for people like me who don't normally solo game, but might have some solo games in my collection or some games that can play solo, this is a really good opportunity to know what's best and what I should be getting to the table for one. Get it? Table for one? I don't know. Someone got that. Someone out there got that.
Deep cut. Going into Wayback Machine, my friend. I was like, what?
Deep cut. Deep.
I know, right? See, this is what you get here. So we'll be talking about all those things. Obviously, the gentlemen here know everything about solo gaming that there is to know, because typically they do get these games to the table. So with that said, obviously, let's jump into the bracket matchup. And the first bracket is the cooperative game bracket. So this bracket has a lot of, you know, top-notch games. You probably own these games. You've probably played these games.
You probably see these games behind me in my shelf. For those of us who are listening or watching, the blessed few who are watching this stream, good number of these are lurking right behind me.
Is this your favorite bracket, Jason?
This bracket just makes me sing. Like this Euro game bracket, I'm not really feeling too much. I don't know what's going on over there. But when it comes to the cooperative games, it can only go downhill from here. Why don't you save this one for last?
All right. How about you, Anthony? You're a big co-op guy. Is that what eventually brought you over to solo gaming?
No, it's not. Jason laughs immediately. No, I don't really like co-op games generally, but there's a few on here I like. We'll get to them. It's funny. Yeah. Like when we used to do the show back in the day, it would be that, like, the co-op stuff, which is overwhelmingly, you know, solo gaming in general, people, co-op games are just naturally feed into that. My bracket was the Euro stuff, the heavy stuff, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But yeah, there's some good co-op games out there, and they've gotten better over time. They're like,
yes,
they're not just like the spreadsheety push pen alpha gaming exercises that they used to be. There's a lot more going on there. Sure. But it's, you know, a lot of these are not for me. Let's put it that way.
But they're all right for me. Let's make it happen.
All right. So our first matchup here is our number one seed versus our number 16 seed. It's Spirit Island at our number one and number 16, Horrified.
So this is an unfortunate, thing. Like, Spirit Island is going to be the juggernaut. It is number one game on that solo list, of just to kind of spoil what could come of this list. I mean, Spirit Island is amazing. Even Anthony loved it upon first play. And I have it back there. It's back there somewhere. But I say unfortunate because poor Horrified. I love Horrified. It is a nice family weight, just fun, pure fun. It might be a little bit too easy solo, like, because it's just, you know, you're less likely to get hit by monsters. But the theme is so well realized, and it is going to unfortunately get crushed underfoot of our number one seed with barely a mention. So gonna have to give a little shine to Horrify, but I have to go Spirit Island.
Yeah, I don't have much more to add to that. I actually like Horrified, considering what it is. Like, this is not typically a type of game I like, but being able to pull in different types of monsters in different modules and always having like a different mix of the monsters that you're facing in that game makes it much more interesting to me. It's not so repetitive. It's thematic. It's fun. You know, it's a good thing to pull out around Halloween. So I have it in the closet, but I have it. But Spirit Island, yeah, this is the game where I was like, maybe I do like co-op games, or maybe I like the best co-op game ever made. I don't know.
We're going to meet up at God willing, we meet up at a con sometime in the future, and the table says cooperative game. This is the game we are reaching for, and that the one that we're both going to have fun with.
Yeah. All right, so that's our number one seed, Spirit Island, moves on to the next round. Next up, things get a little tight. Our number eight seed, Mansions of Madness, versus our number nine seed, Lord of the Rings: Journeys in Middle Earth.
Yeah, the numbers worked out interesting here because the latter is somewhat based on the former. So right. this is Mansions of Madness second edition, we should say. So the one with the app. First edition's a broken mess of a game that we don't want to talk about. but yeah, I don't know. It's, for me, I enjoy both of these games quite a bit. I owned Mansions of Madness second edition when it first came out, and I played it several times. I enjoyed it a lot. I never really got into it playing it solo, though. It was something I played with a group of people. It was more interesting that way. Those games got really long, which was a problem for me. Some of those modules in the app are like 4 hours long, which is so long. Whereas Journeys in Middle Earth does. I know me saying that, but that kind of game is too long.
That kind of game of rolling.
Too many rolling. And then you get Journeys in Middle Earth, which kind of takes that formula and they're like, no dice. All right. Take the dice out. We got cards. It's a little more strategic. You can plan your deck out a little bit. There's, you know, the campaign element to it that builds over time. And the modules, there's just as many of them, but they're not quite as long. I significantly enjoyed that one. The theme helps, you know, Lord of the Rings is Lord of the Rings. But yeah, I almost want to say it would come down to theme, but I don't even think it does. I think Journeys in Middle Earth is just a better game because it's iterating on Mansions of Madness.
Both of these games were shocking disappointments for me. Match of the Madness is basically like a movie. It's a movie with rolling. No, thank you. I'm good on that. I mean, and look, Journeys in Middle-Earth also, I just felt like I was looking at the app way too much more than I was looking at the board. Like the board play wasn't interesting to me at all. And the stitch wasn't enough, like, you know, actual movement and, you know, like accounting for terrain and everything. It's just like you move one and then you press the screen and then the screen tells you, like, you know, all these things you search and all that kind of stuff. And, like, you know, I guess apps are cool. I just don't want them to do too much work. It's almost like there's a difference between, like, you know, a driver assisted car and like a self-driving car. And I felt like, you know, that kind of moved and it kind of bled into the wrong direction. Plus, like, I wasn't entertained by the theme integration of the Lord of the Rings, because it felt like a lot like Descent. Like it was like, okay, Descent, but with elves and like high elves and everything. So it was like, there was a lot that I was disappointed with, but I'm still going to vote for Lord of the Rings Journeys over Matches of Madness because of what Anthony said. At least the Journeys in Middle Earth is shorter for what it offers you. And Matches of Madness is just, I just didn't enjoy it. This is too long.
It's so long.
All right, well, that means our number 9 seed, Lord of the Rings Journeys in Middle-Earth, moves on to the next round. Next up, we have in our 5th seed, The Seventh Continent versus our 12th seed, Ghost Stories.
Ooh, okay. All right, here we go. okay, so we're talking solo game. Seventh Continent is a pretty poor cooperative game because it's basically a solo game blown out. And it is an excellent exploration game. There's tons of content, tons of cards. I mean, I think it's like 1,024 cards in the base set. And then you can get like kind of, you know, more and more on top of that. Hours and hours of entertainment for Seventh Continent. However, you do not see Seventh Continent on these shelves. You see, where is it? There it is. It's up there. Ghost Stories is right above Near and Far. Take my word for it. It's over there. Ghost Stories is up there. It is a classic game. It plays beautifully solo, in my opinion. I mean, harder at the higher player counts. You could play with the tokens. You could play with the four characters, kind of moving them around. I have played hundreds of games with the expansion, without the expansion. I really love this tower defense, gruelingly hard game. But if you know how to play and if you don't rely on those dice, which most people do, is so lucky. Learn to play people. Learn to use the village tiles. You will be able to beat this game on a very regular basis, which I do. And I love it. I enjoy it. Ghost Stories in the upset, our first upset. Well, our first real upset of the tourney. What about you, Anthony?
Yeah, I have to agree. Yeah, I like. Yes! I want to like. I'm with you, man. I want to like Seventh Continent. I backed it. I have it. I even got to the trouble of learning it a couple times. It's just the overhead of getting. It's a lot. It's a lot to get going. It's a lot to the momentum required to get into that game and get moving and rolling with it is a lot for me. And I just never gotten over that hump. So maybe if I could sit down and play that for hours and hours, like say Arkham Horror, the card game, which I've done that with and gotten over that hump, it would have a different opinion. But for that game, I'm just like, I just can't get into it. Ghost Stories doesn't need all of that, right? You 3-4 pages of rules or whatever it is, you're into the game, you play it and kicked, and then you try again, you know. The thing about the game is, like you said, yeah, it's brutally hard, but it's not impossible. It's not unfairly hard. And you can tell that when you're losing. And some of these games you lose and you're like, okay, well, that's just to make me lose. And other games you understand, like, no, I could have done this or I could have done that, or if this had gone this way and I could have tweaked this, and maybe if it rolled it this way. And that makes you want to play again because you're like, oh, I can beat it. So, yeah, I'm with you, man. Get Ghost Stories.
Wow. Right. First upset. Unanimous.
Yes. Our first upset of the competition. The 12th seed, Ghost Stories, move on to the next round. Next up is a classic battle up co-ops. The number 4 seed, Pandemic, versus the number 13 seed, Flashpoint Fire Rescue.
I'm going to tell you straight up on this one.
Flip a coin. That's what that face said. Flip a coin.
You got two very fundamental cooperative systems. And I only put Pandemic on this list. So obviously that can include all of Pandemic Sphere. Like I don't have Pandemic Legacy on here. I don't have Pandemic Iberia or any of the other ones that I actually like. So it's not necessarily just Pandemic base version. But at the end of the day, Pandemic, Flashpoint, they'd be interchangeable for me if someone was like, which game do you want to play? And I know that maybe it's anathema to you, Jason, because you'll go into that, but I'll let you pick because I don't care.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think the Flashpoint system is the Flashpoint system. You know, like it'd be hard to like make it not fires and make it not people. Like you could probably do it, like they did it with Dead Men Tell No Tales, but that was more fire. It's like just You know, they just kind of reiterate on the core concept of fire, but like the Pandemic system can reiterate itself into Roman barbarians or to whatever the Spanish diseases and cholera and all that kind of stuff and water. And it's so open-ended and flexible. I mean, people who know anything about me, that is my number one game of ever, you know, number one solo, number one co-op. So like, because they're so similar, I'm just going to give the edge to Pandemic because there's just more that can come out of that system. Like, and honestly, that's pretty much the only thing that'll separate them. So, I mean, if Anthony is going to flip that coin, then I'll just snatch the coin right out of his hand and say Pandemic and move on with my day.
That's fair. That's what I figured. And I'm okay with that because there are versions of Pandemic that I legitimately really like.
All right. Well, the die went into the air. Jason snapped it from the air. And we are.
Get out of here. I'm not leaving this a chance.
Of course, we are now living in the darkest timeline. Pandemic number 4 moves on to the next round.
Oh, baby.
All right, next up is a really good battle here. We have our number 6 seed, Sentinels of the Multiverse, versus our number 11 seed, Burgle Brothers. So get your teams together, gentlemen. Which one do you pick?
So Burgle Brothers is kind of a in that Forbidden series type game, you know, like Forbidden Desert or Forbidden Island, like, you know, tile-based and movement, but really, really thematic. I mean, I still play Burgle Brothers to this day, another game you'll see on the shelf somewhere over here. I really, really like Burgle Brothers. I'm looking forward to Burgle Brothers 2, which we should be delivering. It got delayed by a year because of the whole COVID and the bottleneck in China and everything. So, I mean, I really dig Burgle Brothers. However, I have even more Sentinels of the Multiverse. I have all of Sentinels. Do you want me to break my back lifting up this giant box? Do you want me to do it? I'll do it if you want me to.
You want to bring it on, Mick? So I got it right here, boy.
You have it down there. Well,
I do.
The big black box.
No, I have piece for piece here. So
oh, you have like here. The come no.
Oh no! Hold on. Oh no!
Here we go.
What did I do?
This is how board gamers throw down. They're like, this is oh my god!
Look at this thing. It's huge. Oh, it's god. Big.
Oh man, we should have had that on for last week's episode.
Oh my god. Too big to play or
love it. I have everything for it. I have fan made expansions. Are they re-releasing it this year?
Yeah, they're doing a kind of like a smaller kind of like big box store kind of version of it. They like what Gloomhaven did with Joys of the Lion, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Love it. Haven't played it in a while. Like, or I played on the app because I think the app really opened it up because of all the tracking. It keeps everything kind of in one place. Mm-hmm. Hold on a second. Anthony, talk while I catch my breath.
All right. Well, I don't know if I might make the situation worse. I don't like Sentinels of the Multiverse.
No, no.
Like, it's not. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's. I've tried playing it a few times. It hit the table a fair amount when I first got into the hobby. And the tracking in that game, the amount of stuff you have to keep track of, the organization, the quality of the components early on. Honestly, even the artwork, I don't really like very much. I don't like any of that stuff. And the core mechanics are fine. And they can be enjoyable in certain cases, like some of the combos you get off and all that stuff. It's fun, but there's so many barriers to enjoying the game. It's just very, very rough for me. And I just never, you know, it's one of those things I could see being like, oh, I don't care about all this stuff because this core part is so amazing. But for me, the core part's fine and the rest of it's not. And so I don't really enjoy the game at all. Whereas Burgle Brothers, I like a lot. It's like, it's one of those games I really enjoy. I have a copy. I have Burgle Brothers 2 coming. So I have a feeling I'm going to be outvoted here, but my vote is for Burgle Brothers.
I mean, I love Burgle Brothers. It makes my who put these brackets together. I hate voting against Burgle Brothers in the first round, but it's going to go Sentinels Multiverse. So let's see, Chris, go ahead and break our tie.
I own both of these games, so I can even pull out my Burgle Brothers if need be. Both of these are great games. I played both of these games actually solo. Sentinels of Multiverse, I picked up so long ago, and I, of course, dragged Anthony to play that. Everything Anthony's saying is correct about the management and the upkeep with that. Burgle Brothers plays a lot easier as a solo game. The only thing I will say, though, is that Sentinels of the Multiverse, with their app and with a lot of the actual components that they've purchased, you know, I purchased over the, like, I have the giant mat, I have a lot of the extra components and tracking and things like that. It does move it up just an inch higher. So I'm going to break the tie here and be the hero of the day and go with Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Well done.
All right, so our number six seed, Sentinels of the Multiverse, moves on to the next round. Next up is our three seed, Robinson Crusoe, versus our 14th seed, Zombicide, Black Plague.
Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, so Black Plague is on here as like the representative of the Zombicide verse, because there's like 15 of those games, and I still think it's the best of them. I haven't played all of them, but it's the one I've enjoyed of them all. But Robinson Crusoe for me is, it's one of those games that just rises above a lot of these other games. Not all of them, like Spirit Island's still my favorite co-op, but I actually really enjoy Robinson Crusoe from the first time I played it. And then the iterations of it over the years, the way they've made it actually easy to learn now with the right rule books and the supplementals, all of the extra bonus content, the expansion content that's come out over the years, there's so much there. Like you could play this game hundreds of times and just not ever even see all the different combinations of things. And I have not come anywhere close to that. So yeah, Robinson Crusoe for me is, you know, it's in my top 100 games. And the only real way I play this game is solo, because it is hard to get people together. So yeah, that's my pick on this one.
I actually think it's a kind of a not a great cooperative game. I just don't think that in Robinson Crusoe you have enough to do with each individual pawn, especially because it's based on your profession. So it's like, okay, I'm the builder, I'm going to build now. And that was my one pawn. All right, I'm good. Well, everybody else gets to decide what to do. But as a solo with the Friday the Dog and a couple other things, all the iterations, Mystery Tales, I thought was very, very good. So I was like, this the second big box expansion for it. And I mean, I just think Robinson Crusoe is very, very good. Zombicide is Zombicide. Zombicide is even more cookie cutter dungeon crawl than Descent. Like I didn't even know if that was possible, but I just don't like, I get why people it's bubblegum fun. I get it, you know, but it's just not what I want. It's not what I want. So, I mean, Robinson Crusoe all day.
All right. That's our number three seed, Robinson Crusoe. Adventures on the Cursed Isle moves on to the next round. Next up is our number seven seed, Arkham Horror, third edition. I believe this would be the card game it's a regular straight board game. Okay. Versus our number 10 game, Street Masters.
All right. So I'm a pretty significant Sadler Brothers fan. They have a couple of games, Brook City, Alter Quest, just delivered this past year. And I like them. They have the same problem that Sentinels of the Multiverse does, in that they are very tracky. And, and especially Street Masters, which was the first one, it had like this pretty significant problem towards the middle to end game, where it's just like mobs all over the place. So for those who don't know, it's a fighting game, and it's in the model of Streets of Rage or Double Dragon, where you're just controlling fighters, and there's like, you know, the Pez dispenser of enemies just shoots out at you, and you have to like wade through that all and miss the boss and everything. So I dig it. It's not my favorite Sadler Brothers game, but I dig it far more than Arkham Horror. What? How did I let this one get past me? I thought it was Arkham LCG. So I'm like, okay, Arkham LCG, whatever. But like Arkham 3rd Edition? What? That game stinks. Woo, no, thank you. So
that's funny.
By looking at it, I'm like, if it was Arkham 3rd Edition versus like any of these 63 games, I'm like, okay, number 63. It happens to be Street Masters. You are lucky. You should have been horrified, man. Horrified should have been in here. Come on now.
I can't argue with that logic, man. I'm with you.
Street Masters.
All right, our number 10 seed, Street Masters, moves on to the next round. And finally, our last matchup for the co-op bracket here, our number 2 game, Gloomhaven, versus our number 15 game, Legends of Andor.
Yeah, it's another big one punching down. I will say this: Legends of Andor is a fantastic game. I love it because it is. I'm not a huge fan of adventure games. I don't like just move over here. I'm going to search for a thing. Hey, I found a thing. I'm going to search over here. I'm going to search for a thing. I'm going to do this thing. And there's not. I don't know. It just. I would rather read a book than to play some of these games. They're just not much happens, and the story is not interesting enough to warrant a game, right? Whereas Legends of Andor kind of builds a puzzle into it, where you're trying to solve the puzzle and do it the most efficient way because you have a limited amount of time. And that's basically it. Like, the story is not amazing or anything, but the overarching, you know, narrative across all the games that he's put out is interesting. But Gloomhaven is Gloomhaven, and, you know, especially with Jaws of the Lion, which is much more accessible, I think, now. My big box is still sitting over there, like, at 30% completed. But Jaws of the Lion, it's easier to get out. I don't have to wrestle with the whole thing. So I got to go with Gloomhaven, but I definitely wanted to give Legends of Andor some due because I love that game. And, yeah, it's one of those few co-op games that I do come back to over and over again. And when there's new content, I play it.
I can't stand Legends of Andor. That game stinks.
I know.
It is.
I know.
It is a massive puzzle disguised as an interesting game. And I understand if Anthony is so enthused in that, but there is a limit to that. And I feel like the things that you do in that in Legends of Andor are so unintuitive. And there, and you know, it actually, like the biggest thing people complain about is like it, the game punishes you for killing monsters. And I get you don't want a game that like just you hack and slash as Zombicide. Zombicide, you just hack and slash and you get like it's only good things happen. In this game, it punishes you basically every single time you kill a monster because it moves forward the round track. And it's like you can traipse along the entire – you can do laps around the entire land. You can discover anything you want. But if I do this to an orc, then the sun rises and sets. I can't take it. There's no way. There's no – imaginative hook in that game whatsoever. It is so frustrating. So like this is another one where it's like it could have been anything. Gloomhaven is wasting its time. What are you doing slumming down here versus this paltry terrible game? On with you, Gloomhaven. Enough of this Legends of Andor nonsense.
It's a great game. All right, so it seems like despite all of that, our number two seed Gloomhaven will move on to the next round. All right, so that's the end of our co-op bracket. Now on to our Eurogame bracket. Anthony, why are you doing this, Jason? Why?
Guess first, man. I did the right thing. We started with cooperative games.
You made me feel welcome, and now it's like, here you go.
Yeah, here's a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Anything in particular why Euro games kind of stand out as solo games?
I mean, they are generally puzzles of some kind, right? Like you have a certain set of components, you have a limited set of resources or time or rounds or whatever, and you have to do something with those things in that space. And that is a solo activity. And a lot of these games, like if you play them with other people, there's not a huge amount of interaction anyway. So you just have to replace what little interaction there is in the solo version and you're good to go.
Right. The nature of the good solo Euro is that it's low interaction. Yeah. And so it's easy to replicate the interaction points, which is the design principle of the Automa when it first came out. And I think like, you know, I think we've kind of evolved like, you know, Automas have evolved and like the Automa itself kind of it has evolved past it. But like the core principle of let me just get in the way at key points and then call it a solo bot. And I think that key principle is still alive in a lot of solo games. I am very disappointed in like recent bots because they just get more and more complicated. Like it reaches a point where it's like when your solo bot is longer than like your solo bot rule book is longer than the actual rule book. I'm good. Like I'm good. You know, I'm especially when your solo bot is like 18 cards or something. And then you have like a giant box and you have 18 cards and it's like a whole set of rules or like, you know, a little cardboard chit and a die. And it's like eight rules or eight pages of rules. No, thank you. I'm good. But if I love the game, then I might bother. Yes.
Yeah. I think a lot of Euro games get hit because they are solitaire games. Like you just basically play by yourself. So I guess it's an easy transition to the solo game market because you're already playing by yourself. There's not a lot of like player interaction all the time. So, all right. With that said, let's get into the bracket. So first up is our number one seed, Mage Knight, versus the number 16 seed, dear God, not the face, Nations.
No mas.
Yeah. I mean, again, I built the bracket, and this was relatively random. It was based on the order that they were listed in the top 200. But Nations is one of my favorite games. It's in my top 20, I think, and I primarily play it solo because if you play with other people, it's like 4 hours long, and it's way too long for what it is. So I would not play that with more than two or three people anyways. Solo, it's fantastic. But Mage Knight is Mage Knight, and it's just a brilliant game. And the only way to play Mage Knight is solo. So it's basically just a solo game. So it's just like, you know, Spirit Island versus anything or Gloomhaven versus anything. You're like, well, I like Nations a lot, but Mage Knight.
This is one of those things like you get it in like wrestling tournaments where it's like you got to give the loser more shine because it's boring to talk about the winner. So,
oh no.
So speaking of losers, Nations. No, I like Nations a lot. Nations is an underrated game, undersupported, and I do miss that there aren't more like big daring civ games. Like, we haven't had a really good daring civ game in a long time. Tapestry does not count. I'm sorry. It's not, it's just that game's a board game with a tech tree. Like, I'm talking about a civ game, and Nations definitely that. I'd rather play it through the ages, which is not here because there is no official solo, plenty of unofficial solos. But this is a quality game, but that is not on my shelf. I got Mage Knight Ultimate Edition sitting right up there, and that is where it's going to stay. So Mage Knight for me.
All right, so not a surprise here. Mage Knight, our number one seed, moves on to the next round. Next up, our number eight seed, At the Gates of Loyang, versus our number nine seed, Anachrony.
Okay. Actually, we'll go back and forth on this one because we've been doing that. Anachrony is one of those examples that I was thinking of when I was talking about like complicated bots, right? So like there comes a point where you just get tired of learning the bot, and like the game has to be really, really, really good in order to kind of get me over that barrier. And Anachrony is one of the few games with complicated bots where the game is good enough to make me want to learn that bot, learn the Chrono bot, get into the mind of David Tursey, who is, I think, probably the preeminent solo designer at this point, right? Absolutely. I think he has kind of like, you know, just his approach. I think he's the person that evolved the Automa into something that is a little bit more kind of feedbacky to what the player is doing while still remaining some semblance of simplicity. It's not simple at all, but like at least it's penetratable on some level. And Anachrony is just a really, really, really fun worker placement game with a really cool motif. And you get this like kind of time travel rewindy thing that going on. What was the number eight seed?
At the Gates of Loyang.
So I'm getting a lot of flack for this, but who cares? Anachrony.
Oh. Uwe cares, man. Uwe.
Uwe cares. All right. So I guess I'll speak up for At the Gates of Loyang because I love Anachrony and I agree with everything you said. So I'm not, no disagreement there. I think Anachrony has one of the better solo bots for a Euro period. And I thought that when it came out, and then the updates to it in the new version, even better. At the Gates of Loyang, though, as far as it, you know, solo Euro farming Euros go, is one of the better ones because it gives you a lot of options, but it's not just this high score race. You're trying to reach a certain point, and it's relatively difficult to do that. It's lightweight. It's relatively quick to play. You don't have to set up this big sprawling mess of boards to play it like a lot of other Uwe games. And the tableau of cards that comes out where you're purchasing the cards from is an interesting mechanic to work around how the cards normally work in that game. I really like it a lot. I do struggle with this one a little bit because I think they're very close in my own personal list. I think the one that I'm going to give the edge to, though, is the one that I actually play more often because it's easier to get out. And that Infinity Box definitely dings Anachrony a little bit because that thing is never coming out anymore. It's going to take 3 hours to set up.
There comes a point where your brain becomes too big. It gets too much. Yeah.
So I'm going to go with that, the Gates of Loyang.
Yeah, I think at the risk of, you know, I guess a broken back or Anthony killing himself trying to lift that box like Jason just did recently. I mean, I have both these games. I don't have the Super Infinity box, but I do have Anachrony. I do enjoy both of the games. For me as a solo player, I'm not really a solo gamer, but as a solo player, as Jason was mentioning throughout, I don't like to have to learn a whole other game just to play the bot. And I don't like the bot's turn to take more time than my turn. And that's what I feel like when I play Anachrony. So if I'm going to play solo, it's going to be at the Gates of Loyang. Our number 8 seed moves on to the next round.
I'm not against that. I completely agree with that. I just felt like, I mean, I'm not an Uwe person anyway. I just feel like his games are very kind of sedate and flat. They don't do a lot for me. So that's my bias. And Anachrony does violate my rule of complicated solo bots only because the game is really good. So I have so many caveats that it's like, I can't defend. Please take my caveats, please. So that's cool.
All right. So again, our number 8 seed at the Gates of Loyang moves on to the next round. Next up, our number 5 seed, Gaia Project, versus our number 12 seed, La Granja.
All right. Yeah, La Granja, I played solo once, and it was good. But the thing about La Granja, too, is, like, in general, that game, it's good, it's fine, there's a lot going on, there's a lot of tracking. The solo game is a good implementation of that, but it doesn't, I don't know, it just didn't feel completely satisfying to me. It felt more like I'm practicing the game, which is what a lot of solo Euros end up feeling like. I'm practicing the game. Gaia Project has a bot, an Automa, and it is pretty streamlined in general. It's fairly straightforward. I mean, for a game this heavy, it's pretty streamlined. It's a small deck of cards, and it tells you various things you have to do. And I enjoy it quite a bit. It's like 2 or 3 pages of rules. It's not crazy considering, you know, the 25-page rule book that it's attached to. And it is one of my favorite Euros anyways. So I'm going to go with Gaia Project.
It's probably the best Automa Factory bot because they make a lot of stuff. And I think that the degree of difficulty in making a bot for a game like this was pretty high. And they came up with some really ingenious ways of cramming a lot onto the cars. Like the cars do a lot of work, and just the way they kind of, you know, because it isn't just flip and move, like you have to kind of put them together, and they come together, it comes together so well. Gaia Project is like Gaia Project. It's tough because like that, it's that Terra Mystica, like, you know, why am I doing this? This doesn't really make sense. I'm like moving the thing into the thing and the thing of the thing of the thing, and I'm doing 17 things and I end up with like one hex. Or like one little, you know, thing or whatever. Like that's how Mystica was, and Gaia Project didn't feel that much different. However, La Granja is like La Siesta. Like, I mean, that game is nothing. Like, I feel like I played that game once, and I feel like that hour of my life disappeared, just like into nothing. I don't remember it at all, without any flavoring whatsoever. So Gaia Project, I'll give it to you. Just make more than Monomad Pedersen happy. I'm happy to do that anytime.
Yeah.
All right, so our number 5 seed Gaia Project moves on to the next round. Next up, the number 4 seed, A Feast for Odin, versus the number 13 seed, it's on Jason's left, of Obsession.
Ooh, Obsession. Actually, this is my right shoulder, so.
Oh, my left, your right.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I'll speak quickly about Obsession because I know where Anthony's going with Feast for Odin. But like, Obsession is a very, very cool, I guess, like, it's a super thematic light Euro. And it's hard to call a Euro because there's a lot of randomness. Like, there's a lot of randomness that comes out, like, because you get a river of tiles, you get cards that you draw, and the servants, you have to kind of coordinate this because there's 3 different like resource streams that have to come together in order to play that game well. And that's hard. Like, and you could get kind of hosed by what's happening. The solo bot, I think they've had a couple of stabs at it, and it's like, you know, it's nothing really sexy about it. It's just like, okay, here, let me take something away and like just play the regular game. And there's different modes to it, but the theme, I actually got my wife to play half a game of Obsession because she watches Bridgerton.
Nice.
And like, she's like, this game's too complicated for me, but this is a really cool looking game. My wife doesn't game at all. So I will speak for Obsession just to get it in there, but I'm going to hand it off to Anthony because I have a feeling I know which way he's going to vote.
So here's the thing. Feast for Odin is like in my top 10 games of all time. I play it solo all the time. But as far as a solo game, it doesn't do anything. You're just playing the game by yourself and you swap the meeples back and forth. It's the bare basic minimum of an Uwe Rosenberg solo game. He doesn't do anything differently. Whereas at Gates of Liang, he tweaks the rules a little bit to make it work with the card tableau. This one is just like you put some meeples out and then the next round, those spots are not available. Okay, right? And so I like playing it because I just enjoy the flow of this game. But right. It almost feels like taking any random Euro off my shelf and just multi-handing it, right? Like, it's not significantly different than doing that. I'm actually going to go with Obsession here because I think it's more interesting as a solo game. It has a bot. It's a fantastic game anyways. It's up there on my list. And I know everybody's surprised because there was years there where I would just pick Feast for Odin for anything just to troll Chris.
Anything. It was, I think,
and it is
like
still
the
in my
first,
top 10, but
it was the first Table for One episode that was like, okay, I'm reviewing this game and that's it. Like, that's all you get, people. Just a Feast for Odin review. I'll see you later.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is, again, it's one of my all time favorite games. I absolutely love it. I just played it this last weekend, actually, solo. But it's not a great solo experience. So if someone's listening to this, like, whoa, what games are good to play solo? I'm like, not this. And it's gotten a little bit, the game itself has gotten better with the expansion, but the solo version has not really, because you score higher with the expansion pieces, right? And so the rule book is like, if you're playing solo, try to hit this score, which is what he does. Try to hit 100 points. That's a good score. And before, you're like, sometimes you would, sometimes you wouldn't. And now you guaranteed always will. I'm hitting like 120, 130 every time. So I'm like, I don't know. It's like going bowling by yourself. I'm like, I don't know. I guess I got to score. But Obsession, it's different. It's interesting. The theme, like you said, is amazing. And I do love that theme, just, you know, as a literature nerd. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Obsession.
Wow.
I know.
All right. Our number 13 seed Obsession moves on to the next round. Next up, it's our number 6 seed, Underwater Cities, versus our number 11 seed, Clans of Caledonia.
All right. This one's actually really hard. I love both of these games. So the thing, let's start with Underwater Cities, because Underwater Cities is, it does a thing similar to Terraforming Mars, where you are playing the game just as you would normally play it. You don't really tweak much about it, except there's one piece moving around blocking spots for you. So there's certain spots not available as you play. And if you have the expansion, there's also boards that are specifically for solo play, which is nice because you get like some different types of boards, but now they're not, you know, the crazy ones that you would play with multiplayer. And you're trying to hit certain marks, and it's legitimately difficult to do. So it does feel like Terraforming Mars in that way. You have to complete these certain objectives. You have to have 7 cities out. You have to hit a certain point value depending on which version of the game you're playing, what expansions you're playing. It's difficult. It makes you want to sit and play it again because you're like, almost got it and I didn't quite get there. And that's not something you get in a lot of these solo games. So it's really good for that reason. Clans of Caledonia doesn't really have any of that. You block a bunch of spaces and then you play through it solo. And the thing I love about Clans of Caledonia solo is you can play it in like 15 minutes. Like, it's this big sweeping Euro. It takes 2 hours to play, but you can knock it out in 15 minutes. Because you're just taking all of your actions that you would take in a full 5-round game all at once, occasionally taking income in between. So it does end up feeling more like a practice game. Underwater Cities feels like an actual solo game. So I love both these games. They're both like the top half of my top 100, but Underwater Cities is a better solo game for me.
Having played Clans of Caledonia, I adore Underwater Cities, so I'm just going to have to go with that.
All right, our number 6 seed Underwater Cities moves on to the next round. Next up, our number 3 seed Scythe versus our number 14 seed Lisboa.
Okay, so Scythe is, if we're just talking base Scythe, right, with like, you know, maybe some player powers and everything, I think that Scythe is, I think the community is right, it's a little bit overrated. You know, I just feel like you know, there's groups that play it. They play it and they play it, they play it, right? And I have some groups like locally. I was like, what are we doing today? Try to take over the world and play Scythe. And that's what we do. And I just like, I like Scythe well enough. I loved Rise of Fenris. And I know you loved Rise of Fenris as well, Chris. But I can't include that in the rating for this because we're talking about Scythe. And I think Scythe, like the reason why Rise of Fenris was good was the story. And it's kind of, you know, it's good to, as a group experience and all that kind of stuff. I think as a solo game, and I love what Morten did with the bot. I mean, the bot is a really neat little amoeba like spreading out bot. It's just, it's, you know, it's like a seven, you know, and I just don't think it deserves like the, that really high praise. And I'm surprised that it's kind of endured this long. What was the other game you talked about?
Lisboa.
Lisboa is so good. It's my favorite Lacerda. It really is. Like, and I haven't gotten a chance to really plumb the steps, but I love the historical integration. I love the, you know, what Ian O'Toole did with just the whole presentation of it and just sinking into it, just like really deceptively simple worker placement. And just, you know, like, cause it feels like a bigger game. Like it feels like a really hefty thing. It's a huge box and it comes, you go down there. But like, the thing for me was the theme really helped it be simple. Like it makes sense. It's like, you need stone to build a building. Okay. You know, I'm not just like putting a polyomino in a space and calling it conquering. that makes no sense to me. I'm not just like running around the board 17 times and not taking any time. That makes no sense to me, but I'm building a building out of stone. Sure. or whatever it is that you're doing in Lisboa. So there's just so much to love about it. I'm really, it's one of those things where it's like an underrated game is meeting an overrated game for me. And it's like, there's no question which one's going to win. So Lisboa for me.
Yeah, I think I could mirror pretty much everything you said there. I really enjoyed Scythe when it first came out. I got really cold on it over the following years. I have not played Rise of Fenris, so I'm still very cold on Scythe. And it's to the point where I'm like, I know I should play Rise of Fenris because everybody says it's so great, and I just don't feel like getting into it. I've really had a lot of trouble with that bot too. I love it, but every time I play it, I'm like, what are the stupid movement rules again? Like, cause there's like three pages of movement rules and I'm like, I can't remember them all. So it's annoying. Lisboa though. Yeah. It's a beautiful game. It's fantastic. I love all of Lacerda's solo modes. They're very clever. And they're a fun way to play the game. And it's not just like your typical Euro high score rush. You know, there's actually something that's working against you. So I'm going to go with Lisboa here as well.
All right. Our number 14 seed, Lisboa, in the dramatic upset, moves on to the next round.
That next was like, it was like an overrated like Duke or something like that, just showing in there that like people are betting on Duke because their name is Duke, but they have actually no good players. And it's like, or that particular year or something. It's like, okay, they're getting upset by Gonzaga. Here you go. Done.
Yeah. All right. Our next matchup is our number 7 seed, Neusford, versus our number 10 seed, Everdell.
Ooh, Everdell. I love Everdell so much. It's so good. I don't know if it's Anthony's quite type of game because it's a very light game. It's a very light game. It's very, you know, it's not that hard to kind of plumb its depths. It's a, you know, worker placement, engine building. I just filmed a playthrough for it for the One Stop Co-op Shop, which will be coming up on this Thursday for the Spirecrest expansion. I have, you know, basically, oh, there it is. There it is. It's right there. Oh, yeah. and I completely adore Everdell, everything about it. And so like, I have a hard time. I guess because it's in the Euro category and I can understand why you put it there as opposed to the other categories. Cause I don't think of this as a Euro so much because it's so lucky and it's so like dependent on card draw and everything. I just don't associate that. But as a game, just as a pure game, like Everdell, I'm going to be voting for that all the time. So Everdell for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'll talk about Neusford on the other side. I do love Everdell. I have everything. I'm currently trying to decide whether to spend more money on stuff for it, but it is a beautiful game, and I love it. Neusford is, it's like taking everything about Uwe Rosenberg and boiling it down into like half the length of a typical game. Just two resources, very straightforward worker placement. For some people, that doesn't work because it's too far boiled down and it's still expensive. For me, it works really well. I enjoy it quite a bit. And the solo mode is one of those ones, like I talked about Clans of Caledonia, where you can play it in like 15 minutes, then reset and go again. And so when I set that one up, I'll play it 3 or 4 times in a row because it's quick. You can try things again. And it's actually up there with At the Gates of Luoyang for me with like Uwe games that I will play solo over and over again. I think Everdell is a better game overall, but I think for me, Nusfjord is in a more enjoyable solo game.
Obviously, if I'm going to break the tie here, I guess, as Anthony mentioned before, Everdell's a little more thematic, a little more engaging. Nusfjord tends to be one of Uwe's kind of like, again, a bit of boiled down Euro game that we've kind of seen before. And again, if it's between the two, I'm always going to pull Everdell out. I may not pull the tree out, but I'm definitely pulling Everdell out because
I'm never going to pull that tree out again. Plastic. It's there as a demo tool. Like, because I demoed this game at PAX. I think you guys stopped by the booth or maybe, there you go. And, you know, people were, the tree turned people's heads.
It does.
Once their heads are turned, put that tree away because it's useless.
Yeah.
But as a tool to turn people's heads, I cannot take anything away from it.
Yeah. And it's just, there's more interesting combinations with Everdell. I mean, the deck is very large. Like you said, Anthony, it is one of those situations where it's like, Nusfjord's a good game. Everdell is a more interesting game because of the combinations. But Jason, as you said, it is a lucky combination game. Did you get what you needed to match up for the objective? Maybe you didn't or didn't. But every time I play Everdell, I always have a different combination of success. So that means our number 10 seed, Everdell, moves on to the next round.
Wow, a lot of upsets this bracket.
All right. And our final matchup for our Euro game bracket is our modern day classic, our number 2 seed, Terraforming Mars, versus the classic of classic Euro games, our number 15 seed, Castles of Burgundy.
Ooh, okay. So Castles of Burgundy didn't even have a solo mode until like very recently, an official one, until one of those, whatchamacallit, the calendars. And then they put it in the new version. It comes with the new version, prettier but not prettier version that they released not too long ago, and it's good. It's pretty good for a solo version of a game. Like Stefan Feld's clue been thinking about this, his games are starting to implement them more, but Terraforming Mars is just an amazing take on solo play because it was never like it does the trick of it's the same game, but there's goals you have to hit, so you can lose, and that is a thing that all of these things are trying to do, and most of them don't pull it off. They're either high score races, or they just constrict you some way, or they change all the rules and throw a bot at you, and you have to learn a new rule book. Terraforming Mars is just like, play the game for this many rounds, and if you hit these goals, you win. And if you do not, you lose. And that's it. And I love it. I've played it like at least 100 times. So it's easily Terraforming Mars.
I have the app, and I've been playing a lot of the Terraforming Mars app. Just, you know, it's nice to be able to, like, you know, whip out a nice quick solo game just like really quickly. And even when I had the board game, I did a thing because we did that episode where we talked about the strategy in Everdell's Game Night of the Terraforming Mars thing. And I just wanted to I felt like beating with every corporation. So I just did it. I beat it with every corporation. It's like trying to figure out the different moves and strategies and everything, meteors. And
yeah.
And so Terraforming Mars, like that is it's a really, really great game. And I know it's one of those games that's like, it's so lauded that it's maybe a little bit overrated at this point, but, and I know people who do not like it, but I come back to it and it's like, you know, even if I think like, oh, is this a really good game? I want to play it again. So no, Terraforming Mars all day.
Yeah. All right. That means our number 2 seed, Terraforming Mars, moves on to the next round. Our next bracket is Heavy Games and War Games. So Anthony, what are we looking at here?
Yeah, it's a bit of a grab bag. So there's some Euros.
You got to make four categories. You got to make four buckets. Got to figure that out.
Yep. And, you know, we're not a war game podcast. And Jason, you're not a war gamer. So we couldn't just like go get all the war games that play solo. But there are a few in here that either I've played or I know that you've played or just generally that are highly rated. So we're going to talk about a few. But yeah, these are heavier things. These are war games. These are like longer, more involved types of things. Different types of solo takes, but we'll get to them.
All right. So let's start off our bracket with our number 1 seed, Root, versus our number 16 seed, Roads and Boats.
I've never played Roads and Boats. I had Travis Hill on, who is a huge Roads and Boats fan, talking about the game on my show, Shelf Stories, which is my new YouTube channel. Sounds like fun, but Root is just kind of best in class at this point. There's so much stuff for it. And what I appreciate about Root more than anything is like the asymmetric factions allow different play styles. And you can like, hey, you like to, you know, have a bunch, control a bunch of characters, control the board. Here, take this. And you like to play one character that Arts and not play this. And you like an extra challenge of like, you know, the, you know, kind of keeping things in sequence, play this. Or you like, you know, so like it kind of like has something for everybody and it somehow works. So, I mean, and it's cute. It's cute as all heck. So then like Root is just, it's it's something for everybody in Root. I don't love it solo, you know, because I think, or at least I didn't love the package bot. I know they've since released like the bigger, better bot project or something like that. So I haven't played any of those bots, but I'll take people's word for it that they're good. I just think that Root's an excellent game. So Root all day. Roads and Boats, sorry, I haven't played you.
Yeah, I actually reviewed the Clockwork expansion last week, the first version, not obviously the second one's coming in the next Kickstarter. And it is a significant improvement over that initial, just the cat bot. Not only because you have four of them to choose from, so you can play a solo game with any of the factions and just throw in enough bots to make it balanced, but that they're more streamlined and more straightforward. But so as a solo game, I think it does work finally. It did not before, and the fan versions were better than what came in the box. But as a game, this is my number two game of all time. I love this game. I will play this anytime, anywhere, almost with anyone. There are some exceptions, but with the number of factions we have now, we have 10 different factions plus the hirelings that you're going to throw in there. There's thousands of possible combinations, and I've yet to have a game where I'm like, I don't really like this faction. I don't want to play this one anymore. I'll play any of them. I don't care. They're great. Maybe the cats are boring. I don't know, but everything else is amazing. So yeah, root all day. And that's not to say that, you know, Roads and Boats is a bad game. I love Roads and Boats. I've played it solo once. It's a pure sandbox type of thing where you just doing whatever to exchange various things for other things. So it's a bit of a puzzle at the end of the day. But the focus of Root, the theming of Root, and all the variability just make it one of the best games ever made.
All right. So that means our number one seed, Root, moves on to the next round. Next up is our number eight seed, Comancheria, versus our number nine seed, Thunderbolt, Apache Leader.
Yeah, some fun ones in here to try to spell out. Comancheria is one of those games that I picked up at some point where I was like, I'm a solo gamer. This is new. I'm going to play this. And 10 hours later, I'm like, what I need a nap. It's so long. But it is also amazingly good. It's really good. I wish I played it more often because then I wouldn't have to read the rules again. But it's the kind of game you put out, like if you have multiple tables, it's the kind of game you'd put out and set out and maybe play a couple hours every lunch or evening or whatever for like a week, maybe to get through it. But it's, you know, war games are fun and interesting, but the theming's always just like, I don't know. This one is, you know, it does a lot of work to make sure that the theme is accurate and interesting and not, you know, all whitewashed to the point of making you uncomfortable or just clearly being historically inaccurate. It's interesting, and I like this one a lot. So Comancheria is someone I actually kept, despite the fact that I probably never get around to learning those rules again. But it's good.
I've played neither of these games, but on behalf of Liz Davidson from Beyond Solitaire, I'm going to vote for Thunderbolt Apache Leader, one of her favorite games.
All right. Well, I've never played either of these games.
Look what I've done. I guess Anthony gets it because he's the only one that's played anything.
Yeah.
And we'll go to Anthony.
And I think Anthony wins here just based on the fact that I've clearly butchered the name. And again, I have to pay a penance for this. So Comancheria, the rise and fall of the Comanche Empire, moves on to the next round. Next up is our number five seed, Leaving Earth, versus our number 12 seed, Conflict of Heroes, Awakening the Bear.
Anthony, you're all over this one.
Okay. All right. So on one hand, we have Leaving Earth, which is a space simulation, a space race simulation, I guess. And then on the other hand, Conflict of Heroes, which is a pure war game. And Awakening the Bear is an expansion for that that turns it into a solo war game. Leaving Earth is, I'll just say that flat out, like up front, that's my favorite of these. It's a pure simulation. Lots of math, lots of just trying to figure out the best sequence of things. You're going to fail at certain times or not if you don't want to, but it really is like, this is what it took to get a rocket off the ground, right? With the expansions, you get into like a little bit of sci-fi almost, because it's like going to the outer planets, you know, maybe sending some probes out there, but like a little bit more that you can do there. It's a beautiful game. It's ridiculously hard to find, though. I still don't think anybody picked this up for publication. It's like self-published. Conflict of Heroes is amazing. It's a really well done solo implementation on top of a war game. I'm just not a huge war gamer. Like, I had this at one point. I played it. I was like, that's very good. I don't like it. I just don't like playing simulations of real world wars, you know? So for me, it's Leaving Earth. But both of these are very good. If you do like war games, Conflict of Heroes is very solid and accessible. It's not as heavy and dense as like a GMT.
We're going, Anthony, on this one as well. Like the Euro game I will play because it's that kind of low interaction. That's kind of also in my style. But these games, oh boy.
All right, that means our number 5 seed, Leaving Earth, moves on to the next round. Next up is our number 4 seed, PAX Premier Second Edition, versus our number 13 seed, On Mars.
Anthony?
So PAX Premier Second Edition was my game of the year a couple years ago. It's another Cole Worley game, and who also designed Root. It is fantastic. It's a beautiful game. The production is amazing, and the rule tweaks that were made from the first edition are significant and really, really make the game sing. I don't really like the solo version of it very much. I know some people really love it. I didn't enjoy it very much because this is a game all about interaction. It's like how you interact with each other. It's how these cards... there's literal assassins in the game where you can destroy other people's cards through careful manipulation of your actions. And that's still there, but it's just not as interesting. On Mars is Vital Lacerda's heaviest Euro. And again, we talked about with Lisboa, those bots or his versions, the Lacerda bot or whatever he calls them, they work. It's engaging. It's interesting. And this game, it jumped up to the top of my list, near the top of my list of Lacerda games when it came out last year. And I've played it several times this year solo, which is a rarity for his games because they are big and sprawling and take up a lot of space. So I love both of these. Pax Premier is one of my favorite all around games, but On Mars for solo for me.
All right, so our number 13 pick, On Mars, moves on to the next round. I will say, I'll jump in here for a second, Lacerda games are great, and Lacerda games solo modes are great. This is my favorite Lacerda solo mode. There's just something about On Mars that it just plays into that whole theme that you really do feel like this solitaire kind of explorer out there on your own trying to make the best out of that kind of like hair tight situation. So yeah, I'm a big fan of the solo mode here. All right, next up is our number 6 seed, Zaya, Legends of Adrift System, Anthony's all-time favorite game, and our number 11 seed, 1862, Railway Mania in the Eastern Counties. Anthony, try to, for once, dear God, for once, try not to act biased. We know you love Zaya. It's your game. Show everybody your tattoo. Come on. Show everybody your tattoo. Quick. Oh, you have a minute there. No? All right, fine.
Get the embers of the Forsaken Star expansion. Zaya will treat you much better. It was a Kickstarter game. It was an early Kickstarter game. And it was the designer fever dream type thing of like, I'm going to have an open world and we're going to explore everything and you're going to turn over one tile and you're going to get burned up in the sun and you're going to, all sorts of wonderful things are going to happen. And like in practice, it's like, whoa, I can't really kind of handle this. And Embers of a Forsaken Star kind of like coalesced a lot of things and just, you know, kind of just gave it shape and gave it like, you know, some guardrails. And it just, it's a much better game. And so like, it's a weird pairing. I'm wondering why this is kind of the bucket over here. But the fact that I have played Zaya and I do enjoy the newer versions of Zaya, I'm going to have to give this one the nod over here.
Yeah, I've played it twice. I played it with Chris 4 years ago. One of the worst gaming experiences of my life. And
and that's not because of Chris. I won.
Yeah. No. Not his fault at all. Many, many other things. But and then I played it again about a year ago, actually. Maybe a little more than a year ago. Obviously more than a year ago. And it was like local friends saying, like, you got to give it one more chance. The expansion. I played it. It's better. I still hate it. So it went from like a 2 to a 4, maybe. I'll never.
I understand the feeling. Yes.
Yeah. It's not for me, and that's fine. Like, I played it. I'm like, it's cool, guys. I'm glad you love it. Just don't invite me to this kind of game ever again. 1862. I got into 18XX games last year, or I guess 2 years ago now. That's another genre that's not for everybody. That's for a very small number of people. This is one of the very few, maybe only 18XX games with a solo mode. And that alone makes it popular because you can play it solo. It's not great, but it works. But I have to vote for it because it's not Zaya. So, Chris, you choose.
this is Sophie's choice here. I don't know. I love both of these games so very much. I've played Zaya. I have not played solo, so I can't speak to that. I haven't played 1862. I haven't played any of the 18XX games because just generally they are, you know, scary. They're just scary out there. And again, a solo mode of that would be a little more challenging as far as that's concerned. So again, going based upon zero information here, and just for the fun of it, I'm going to go with Zaya, Legends of Idrisus.
Yes, yes.
Oh.
I did a thing in this bracket. Yay.
Yes, you did.
All right, next up is our number 3 seed, Navajo Wars, versus our number 14 seed, Gandhi, the Decolonization of British India, 1917 to 1947.
Go for it, my friend.
Yeah. You love how I put the whole title in there? I'm like, you're going to read all of this.
And I didn't see this in advance, so yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah, so Navajo Wars is very much like Comanchery. I think same designer, actually. Just approaching a theme that's outside of the typical war game sphere. It's very good. Gandhi, however, as a coin game, and there's like 12 or 13 of these coin games now, but generally all the coin games are war games. This one is different because it has this idea of peaceful resistance within, like, it's a political take on the coin system, which is just brilliant. And the solo version, while kind of heavy, there's a lot of overhead to it. Like, and any of these coin games have a lot of overhead. So Cuba Libre or, you know, any of those types of things, Andean Abyss. But if you get through that and feel comfortable playing it, you know, like any GMT type of game, it's just so good. So good. And I knew it would be when it first got up on the P500. I pre-ordered it way in advance. And I'm really glad I did, because just the sheer, like, to even think of that, like, let's make a war game, but it's not actually about war. It's about this really particular time in history and like these political powers and peaceful resistance in India. And it's so good. So yeah, Gandhi for me.
All right. So our number 14 seed, Gandhi, the Decolonization of British India, 1917 to 1947, moves on to the next round. All right. Next up is our number 7 seed, Space Corps, 2025 to 2300 AD, up against Tricarion.
Difficult choice over here. I really adore Space Corps. I think Space Corps is a really fun game. It occurs. Another one of those games that's like deceptively long. You get the box, it's like mostly cards, but then you get into it and it's like there's a phase one, there's a phase two, there's a phase three. And another one of those games, like what Anthony was saying, you wish you'd play it more because then you'd remember. And like, it's a fun game when you remember it, but then you bust it out after a year. It's like, how does this go? You know what's exactly happening here. But as a card-based, card engine-based exploration system, you know, but that has that propulsion idea, like you're always pushing out and, you know, whatever it is, you know, colonizing and everything. And the sense, like, it gives a great sense of like expansion. So like by the time you reach that third era, you're like moving 6,000 trillion light years and you're exploring the edge of the known space and everything. And I fall for the magic trick, and it's cool. And like, there's a good card base engine under that. So that's excellent. Tricarion, I've only played a couple of times, and Tricarion, You know, it, like, it's doing some cool things, but I just feel like there's a lot of sizzle, not a ton of steak, you know, under there. Like, I just, it's one of the Mind Clash games where, I mean, I believe there's some Mind Clash games I love. You see Cerebria up here, which is an unfortunate, you know, not represented here. If there was any Mind Clash game, I would definitely choose Cerebria over all of them, even Anachrony. Tricarion, I just felt like, you know, I just didn't get a soul. I didn't really get why I was doing what I was doing. It was just kind of like doing a bunch of stuff, and it was really pretty, you know, with a coolish theme. But I just didn't resonate with me. So Space Corps is an easy choice here.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. I've played Tricarion once. Chris showed me how to play. We played a 2-player game like last year, the year before. And it's very good. I really enjoy it quite a bit. Like, Mind Clash games are a little bit tough for me sometimes because, like, Cerebria, you talk about what you like. I had the opposite reaction. I didn't like that game very much. And it's just because there's a lot, and it doesn't feel like it's filed down or edited or filtered in a way. And it's all their games are like this. And so sometimes it really works for some people, and sometimes it really doesn't. And Tricarion leans on the does, but there's a lot there. So I just haven't been able to wrap my head around getting all that back out, relearning the game, relearning the solo. And now, same problem as I have with Anachrony, it comes in a giant box because I got all the extra expansions now. And I'm like, unpack all this, and it's too much. on the flip side, we got Space Corps. Everything you said is correct. I love this game. I do wish I played it more for that exact reason. So I'm going to go with Space Corps as well.
All right. So it seems Space Corps is moving on to the next round. I will mention, though, I am a big Mind Clash fan, and Tricarion is my favorite Mind Clash game, and I actually do play that solo. I think the Dalgar's Academy expansion really adds a lot to the game and really just bulks up that in a really good way. So if you haven't tried that, definitely try out the expansion, because I think it does add to the game dramatically for a solo element. All right, our final matchup for the Heavy Game and War Game bracket is our number 2 seed, Nemo's War, versus our number 15 seed, D-Day at Omaha Beach.
What a... Dude, this is weird. This is such a weird bracket. D-Day, it's one of those kind of hoary old designs that it's like... People are going to get mad at me. And I don't know if there's a lot of crossover. I don't know if the solo, like the one-player guild, because they kind of are very fond of this game. Is they're going to cross over, but it really is old. It shows its age. And I just don't, I feel like it's long for no reason. And like, or like it's lengthened by the dicedness of it. Like, you know, okay, just because it's long, doesn't mean I want to sit there rolling dice for 4 hours. But Nemo's War has dice. Oh, it has dice.
Oh yeah.
But shorter time frame and a much more integrated story, hugely thematic, victory point games. Definitely the DNA is there. I have Nemo's War up there. It is right there, and very happy to keep that in my collection as a cool kind of dice based adventure game. You know, I wonder what's going to happen with, like, now that victory points is kind of like no longer exist as an anything. And we'll see if we get, like, you know, further content for it, like little expansions and everything. But for the most part, so Nemo's War all day.
Yeah, I agree. Nemo's War is fantastic. I've had it forever. I finally got it to the table over the summer.
It's a deceptive bear to learn. I don't like it. I don't like that part anyway.
It was my third attempt to learn the game. The first time I was like, set it up, look at the rules. I'm like, I don't want to do this. And
like, we were talking about reviewing it on every night's game night for like a long time. We're like, we're going to get to this. I swear. We never got to it.
Yeah. No, the benefit now is that they've run 3 Kickstarters and there are a bunch of videos to learn the game. So you don't have to read the rulebook if you don't want to, which I did not do. And it was great. But yeah, I'm going to go with that one as well. That game's fantastic.
All right. Well, that wraps up our bracket here. We move on to our final bracket, lighter fare and card games. So there's actually good solo games here, Anthony?
Yeah, lots of them. Actually, this is the one I had to pare down the most. Like, I built this list, just pulling together everything that I thought at least one person had played and everything. And this one was the much longest one I had to cut down the most.
All right. So let's get started off with our first matchup, our number 1 seed, Marvel Champions, the card game, versus our number 16 seed, Fleet, the dice game.
All right. Yeah, so I love both of these games. Fleet the Dice game is my favorite Roll and Write. I think it feels like a full game, which almost no Roll and Write pulls off effectively without becoming crazy long. And unfortunately, it's up against Marvel Champions, which is becoming my favorite LCG at this point. Like, I really enjoy this game a lot. I've bought all the content for it, and I just get sucked into it and replaying and replaying and replaying all these different new heroes to try to, you know, work. Basically, there's not even a story in the game at this point, except for like the little Red Skull thing, which is not much of a story. But yeah, I know. Yeah, it's not great. But I'm not a theme guy, so I don't really care. I just love all the different puzzle elements. And now you have like, whatever, 15, 20 different heroes to play through. It's a blast. So for me, it's Marvel Champions. I play this game constantly.
I am going to Butler University this one and go with Fleet the Dice game, because Marvel Champions was, it's a solid game. I can't I understand why people love it, and I can't like sit here and say it's a 6 out of 10. I cannot. It's a objectively really, really good game, building upon the bones of the different LCGs that have came before. And I can see why people are into it, but it just doesn't have a soul for me. The story isn't really there. And the different heroes, like, you know, the way you construct the deck, like, you know, you listen to Sentinel Multiverse, it's a 40 card deck. So, you know, you have the, you know, like an integrated experience, right? You know, maybe it's a little bit samey, but it doesn't have to be. Like, you can play it out and it plays differently, depends on different bosses and all kind of stuff. With Marvel, you like each hero has, I don't know, 10 cards of their own, depending on the which it heroes ish. And then you have to shuffle in all these other cards. So like you're shuffling in, sometimes you shuffle the roll cards, like the Justice or whatever it is. And that could be okay. But then you shuffle in those like utility cards and they're usually garbage. Unless maybe they've gotten better since I've played it, because it's a lot of different, you know, stuff for it now. But like, I just can't penetrate it. And it just doesn't feel like my favorite heroes. And I'm a huge Marvel person. So like, it's an objectively good game. It's just not for me at all. And so Fleet the Dice game is I agree with Anthony, very, very fleshed out real game. And you know, among my favorite Roll and Writes, I have a couple others that are like simpler. They give me different stuff, but like in terms of like that combo like type feeling that I want to get, like a pinball machine, like you roll and it's like ding 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 ding, you know, like towards the end of the game, because you're getting all the coins and all the combos and everything. It's wonderful. So I'm going Fleet the Dice game, 16 seed. Let's see what you got, Chris. Let's see what you got for a little upset mojo.
Yeah, an LCG or a Roll and Write. This is your real Sophie's choice.
It is, because I unfortunately I don't happen to be a fan of either of just the general mechanic of either one of these games. Like you said, Anthony, I think the Roll and Write games are fine, but anytime they're on the table for too long, they overstay their welcome. And for the LCGs, it's just a money sink. And there is, as you said, Jason, there is some thematicness that's missing. It's certainly hollow in some ways, and I can't really put my finger on it. And Anthony and I have had this, you know, battle about the game. Like, where is the theme that you find when you play Arkham Horror, the LCG, that you don't find here? So it's a rough combination of just mechanics that generally just don't work for me long term. I think the tiebreaker here for me is going to be, what would I be more likely to play long term if I was a solo gamer and I did want to have a game that would hit the table again and again? And it's going to be Marvel Champions, the card game, just because of the additional content.
I was hoping to slay the beast.
Hey, look, Sentinels of the Multiverse had some serious problems early on, but they had their apps, they had their additional content, they're upgraded. So it did bring the game around. And I think the Marvel Champions, a card game with their additional expansions, is bringing the game around too. So our number one seed, Marvel Champions, a card game, moves on to the next round. Next up is our number 8 seed, Cartographers, versus our number 9 seed, Coffee Roaster.
This was not even a question for me. We're going Cartographers all day. Coffee Roaster is Warp's Edge is just replaced it as a bag builder in every single way. You know, like, you know, you're building your bag and you're kind of pulling out stuff that's like more and more powerful as you build. And Coffee Roaster is just like, Like, I don't even, it's almost like not even a game. It's like, just like, okay, I'm building a bag. it just feels like old tech at this point. While Cartographers is just a beautifully simple game that I can play in like 10 minutes. I played it in therapy with people. And it's just, it fills a lot of roles and, you know, we're getting more of it and I'm looking forward to it. So like Cartographers every single day on this one.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. Like, I own both of these.
Really?
Games.
Okay, Coffee I thought Roasters. You were smitten with Coffee Roaster a little bit.
I've cooled on it a lot over the last couple of years. Like you said, there's other games that do similar things better. It's dull. I don't know. There's some reason I don't feel the call to come back to it. Cartographers comes back a lot, so it's such a good roll and write or flip and write or whatever you want to call it these days. but yeah, I'm with you, man.
All right, our number 8 game, Cartographers, moves on to the next round. Next up is our number 5 seed, Friday, versus our number 12 seed, The Lost Expedition.
So Friday was the first solo game I bought. I understood that there was solo games out there in the world, and I was like, I did some research. It's the first one that popped up, so I bought it. I played it a bunch. I enjoyed it. I have not played it in a while now because it does feel dated at this point. Like, it's been around for a while. I've played it a lot. And I know what I'm getting, right? On the flip side of that, you've got The Lost Expedition, which I played obsessively when it came out. And it is, to some degree, completely random how you're going to perform in this game. And I don't care. I don't know why I don't care. I hate this kind of randomness. Like,
it tells a good story. It's a really good story. Like, you could see it. Like, you could see I have a gun and I'm going to shoot the snake and I, you know, that, and like, I'm going to get meat from the snake. I'm going to eat the meat and I'm going to, you know, use the meat to power up and jump over the ravine. I mean, it's like, it's not like a perfect story. And I remember when I first reviewed it, I was like, okay, there's some weirdness here, but just, you know, like, okay, get over it and just like ride with what it's offering you. And there's a little bit of it's, there's as much strategy as like a regular solitaire card game, you know, and you don't play like there's a little bit, but you don't, you play it for just the breezy time. And like a Lost Expedition is a breezy time. Friday is a solvable game. Like, you know, you can beat it. Then you get to the point where you beat every time and you can like only take away so much life and you can only like nerf yourself, you know, in terms of the harder and harder mode. So it's like, I'm okay. But yeah, Friday to me is like done. I would never want to pick up Friday again. Expedition, like I'm kind of done with that too because I've already experienced the stories in that game, but it stuck with me longer because of the story elements and how breezy a story delivery system it is.
Yeah, all I'm right. with you. I think I'm in the same boat. It's Friday. I didn't even get to the point where I beat it regularly. I just got bored with it eventually. You know, getting that close, I'm like, I'm good. So,
well, yeah, I mean. Because you execute, well, not that it's beatable every time, but you're kind of like going for the same cards and you go like certain cards are just better than other cards. And like you get those good, you know, the draw cards are better than like plus one life or whatever it is, depending on what's going on. And, you know, like it just depends on the order in which they come and you're trying to like kind of play within that order. But like as you have a strat and you're executing that strat versus playing a game. You know, and where there's like options on like different things that I can do. And I just don't, you know, Friday was good for its time and it's a classic. And if people are just busting into it, it's like, here you go, check it out. That's a cool game. Cause I enjoyed it. But, you know, on the other side of that, you know, Lost Expedition, you know, all day on that one.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the number 12 seed, Lost Expedition, moves on to the next round. Next up is our number 4 seed, Sprawlopolis, versus our number 13 seed, Sagrada.
Yeah. I'm weirdly obsessed with Sprawlopolis. I don't like the first time I played this, I was like, I'm going to, I just play it. And because it takes 2 minutes to play, whatever it takes to throw the cards out there, but just playing it over and over and over again. And Sagrada, I really enjoy. It's a beautiful game. And I owned it for a while, but at a certain point I did get rid of it because I just didn't find myself coming back to it. Other games in the similar bucket, role player, other things of that kind of weight, I prefer more. Whereas Sprawlopolis, it's the wallet game. I take it with me if I know I just need something, like if I'm on an airplane or something, like this is perfect. So yeah, Sprawlopolis for me all day. It's such a simple nothing of a game, but I love it.
Sagrada, I struggled with the solo on that one because it's just like, it just felt like, you know, punishingly hard, like, you know, like the really high point threshold. And it's like, I got to do everything right in order to like even come close to sniffing this game. Maybe they've like re-released it since, or like reiterated on that solo. Like, I'm sure it's been expanded since I've been played it last. So it didn't last for me. Obviously, I have role player over here, which that's going to come up in a little bit. So like that is the thing that I play instead of Sagrada. I'm not like totally enamored with Sprawlopolis either. I just feel like it is very dry, you know, relative to what it is. It's just like, it is a puzzle, you know, and it's a variable puzzle. Like, you, so you have the different goals and you're mashing up things different ways. But I, you know, like, am I building a city? Not even close. I'm just like putting together, like, it could have just been shapes. And I guess like, I, you know, I like the idea of city building. And I've just, you know, I always get disappointed when I see like, okay, city building, anything whatsoever, I have low standards, give me something. It's a puzzle. So, I mean, maybe that has played a role in it, but it's a fine game. So I'm happy to vote for it over a game that I don't even want to play anymore. So that's fine.
Right. All right. So the number four seed, Sprawlopolis, moves on to the next round. Next up is the number six seed, Isle of Cats, versus the number 11 seed, Ganshan Clever.
Talk about a game that I'm done with.
Right. There's a reason they're like, releasing a new version of that every year. They're like, people get burned out. They're like, more version? They're like, all right, sure.
You know, like triple clever. How many clevers do you want? Yeah, I mean, it was like, if you'd asked me like that during the craze, I would have been like, oh my man, this is amazing, and it's in the app, I can play 17 games in the toilet and try to get 300 points and all that and all everything that was happening. And then it's like, you do it and it's like, okay, I am donezo with this. I'm done. I'm never playing this game again. It was like, you know, just kind of like, you just got stuffed in it. And then sometimes you have games where you play it a lot, then you give it a break and you come back to it and you're happy. Like, I'm not coming back to Ganshan Clever at all. No. It's not happening. And so by default, I'm going to have to defer to... Go ahead, Anthony.
Isle of Cats. Cats. Chris, it's happening. It's moving on. Oh. Isle of Cats. This game is so good. You have to play it before you can say these things.
It's multicolored cats randomly stretched out on a pirate ship. Like,
yeah.
Why?
That sounds amazing.
Why is that a thing? So that should never be a thing.
I don't, you know what? Why not is what I'm saying. I don't even like cats. That should tell you that this game is good. I don't like cats. It's all about cats.
You do like cats. I've seen you hugging your cats during podcasts, people. Don't listen to him. The man loves cats.
It is polyominoes for days, though. So, yeah, you better like polyominoes if you want to play out. But if you do, it is one of the better ones out there.
All right. So our number six seed here, Isle of Cats, moves on to the next round. Next up, our number three seed, Role Player, versus our number 14 seed, Under Falling Skies.
I still have not gotten around to playing Under Falling Skies. I don't know why. It's been sitting here, and I think I've gone to set it up a couple times. I'm like, man, there's a lot of rules for a game. It seems like it was 18 cards at one point. Really expanded.
You would never know. You would never know that I was an 18 card printed play from what you get.
Yeah, it's crazy. Role Player. I love Role Player and all the content they've added to it. The big giant box I have now, which it doesn't even seem like the kind of game that would get a big giant box, but hey, ton of stuff in there. So it's not like, oh, it's one of my favorite games of all time. It's just one of those games that like makes me happy enough to play. And it just kind of floats onto my table occasionally when I'm in that kind of mood where I'm like, I'm going to watch something on Netflix. And this is like a nice nothing I can play in the background. So I'm going to vote for that because I haven't played Under Falling Skies. And because it just, for whatever reason, feels too daunting to get through all of that and figure out how to play it. Although I've heard very good things. So
Under Falling Skies is really, really good. It is, yeah, it's a little bit too high of a rules barrier for what it is. So like your instinct is not off on that one. And you know, like when before we had COVID brains, it would have been like, okay, we're just going to pound this out. But like now that we are, you know, have kids all over the place, and it's like I want to play a filler that, you know, if I'm going to play a heavy game, if I'm going to play a rules heavy game, I want it to be a heavy game. Like I want the rules complexity to kind of match what I'm getting, and this one kind of doesn't. But you know, you get past it. It's like this little like kind of Space Invader-y type thing, and it's like it's cool. But I mean, I got the big box over here. You see it, you know, for the people who are watching this, I got the little, it looks like a book. Oh, please. I mean, role player, you know, why couldn't, Under Fall of Skies line up with some of these other turds? I mean, it just comes into, happened to run into role players. So role player is going to stomp it every time.
All right. That's number 3 seed role player moves on to the next round. Next up is the number 7 seed, Onirim, versus the number 10 seed, Hostage Negotiator.
Oh, this one breaks my heart. Another very tough pairing. Hostage Negotiator is, you can't see it with the shine over here, but I have the Crime Wave box with the career expansion. I have everything for it. I reviewed over four videos and all the abductor packs for the Dice Tower. And it was my pleasure to do so. I loved the career expansion, gave it a seal of excellence. It takes a very, very simple game. It really does a good job of building on a career, building personal stories. And I'm really going to recommend it with the career. It's okay with the, you know, the regular boxes too. It's very cheap. You know, you play it. It's cool. But Anthony knows how I feel about Onirim, and I assume he shares many of my feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. I also really enjoy Hostage Negotiator. I also have all that content. And it has faded away a little bit for me in favor of some other dice-based solo games. But Onirim, I do come back to again and again. It's just, it's such an elegant design. I mean, obviously you have to shuffle the cards a lot, but other than that, you have a single deck of cards and you're just going through trying to solve this puzzle. And then if you have the newer version that's been released the last like 5-10 years, it has however many half a dozen variants on how to play the game. So it's not even just
7 like, expansions, all of which I have played on the One Stop Co-op Shop as a playthrough, all 7 expansions and a separate playthrough on the promos, the Sphinx and the Diver and the Mirrors. So I got a separate playthrough for that one as well.
Yeah, I haven't done all that, but but I know how many times you've played this game, and I'm nowhere close. But I do love this. It's one of those games, like, every 6 months or so, I'm like, oh, yeah, I love that game. And I'll pull it out, and I'll play it maybe 30 times, and then it goes away again, and it'll come back in 6 months. So that one obviously has longevity, and I would highly recommend it as, you know, if somebody's getting into solo games and wants something small and inexpensive, it's a great place to start.
If you could find it in print, because I could never manage to keep it in print.
Well, they got the app, right?
So. Yeah, get the app.
Yeah, Onirim was one of the games that I first played as a solo game. This is way back, I think like 8+ years ago when we were at Myriad Games. And Paul, the manager of the store, was like, oh, you're waiting for a game? Yeah, he's like, here, play this. And I'm like, how can I play this? There's nobody else here. Like, what do you mean? He's like, just play it. I'm like, I'm looking through the rules. I'm like, there's no other players. What? No, you can't. How would you do that? How would you play one player game? That's not a game. And yeah, I have the app and I still play to this day. So I assume then our number 10 seed, Hostage Negotiator, will be moving on to the next round.
What?
No. What are you doing?
What? What are you talking about?
I don't know. It seemed like there was a lot of love there.
He's trying to make sure we're paying attention like an hour and a half into the podcast.
I know.
Yeah, I know.
Didn't catch you guys. Guys, go to sleep as you are, and then have nightmares and try to figure it out with a card-based game. All right, our number 7 seed, Onirim, moves on to the next round. And finally, our last matchup for all of these brackets in the lighter fare and card games is the number 2 seed, Arkham Horror, the card game, versus our number 15 seed, Oh My Goods.
This one's easy, right?
Oh My Goods is just, it's Oh My Goods. Like, I was excited about it. And, you know, like, it's because the expansions do make it better, the canyon and all that, add some story elements. But I have to say, at the end of the day, it's another kind of solvable game. Like, you're just kind of doing the same things, economic type stuff. And so it started off good, but it's like, okay, I'm kind of done here. And Arkham Horror LCG is the gift that keeps on giving. I'm not a fan of the LCG model because of just how expensive they are. Like, they're sneakily the most expensive products in gaming. Like, and you would think it's like the big minis expansions. Now, oh yeah, I mean, Bloodborne, you have to spend like $500 to get everything. And but like, you know, you have to spend a good $2,000+ to get all of Lord of the Rings LCG, and you're reaching that with Arkham Horror LCG. So like, you know, it's hard for me to recommend. So it's hard for me to recommend Arkham Horror LCG just because the cost is so prohibitive. But if that is a thing that you can handle, you treat it like a Netflix subscription, so you like kind of spend a little bit a month, and you're getting into some of the cycles. Like it's clearly my favorite LCG because of the story based elements of it, and it's just a really really brilliant, really implemented system. So Arkham Horror LCG for me.
Yeah, this is a no brainer for me. Like, I don't even have all my goods anymore. I picked up Expedition in Newdale, which is fine, but not even that great of a game. It's just better than all my goods for me. But Arkham Horror is just, it's brilliant. You know, it's expensive, but I've been buying it the whole time. So for me, it's just like a Netflix subscription at this point, like $15 a month. I get my Arkham Horror, I move on. Right. And it's just a staple of my game budget. And I am way, way, way behind on all the content, but I know someday, you'd think in the middle of a pandemic, but someday.
You'll never get to it. You'll never.
Not going to happen.
Nope. Not in a million years. Someday someone's going to buy that that whole set off of me, and they're going to be very excited to get all this stuff that's out of print. But.
All right. So that is our last matchup, and that's our number two seed, Arkham Horror, the card game. All the madness of collecting an LCG in your hands. All right, gentlemen. So that is our four brackets for our March Madness Gamer brackets here. Best solo games. Any last words before we head out?
I mean, there's a lot of different variety here. Like I say, you know, Anthony based it on the top 200 solo games list. And we enjoy doing that every single year, kind of covering that. And like, it's a big fun event, you know, like, and you guys were helping me out this past year with the Euro end of it. And, you know, it's a big thing where a lot of solo gamers can come together and celebrate it. And, you know, you wanted me to plug Shelf Stories. I will plug Shelf Stories. I have last year's commentary episodes featured prominently, including these two gentlemen who helped me out and other, you know, content creators, Kevin Erskine, Liz Davidson, Michael Kelly. And it will happen every single year that I am doing. We're going to do solo gaming. We are now currently running through top 50 cooperative games through the One Stop Co-op Shop. I have a big call with all the boys, six of us, going through our top 50 cooperative games, kind of an aggregated list. And I have a lot of different commentary on Shelf Stories. I have my Good Trouble series, which I tackle topics in culture and multiculturalism in particular. I have Shelf Help as a mental health therapist. Lots of stuff in my channel, and I'm having a really good time with it. So please visit Shelf Stories for gaming and, you know, gaming on the table and above the table.
All right. Awesome, Anthony, yeah,
thanks for coming
you
on. Mm-hmm. No, just wanted to say, you know, obviously it's great to see you, Jason. We've done many of these. Yeah. It's always been a blast to come on your shows. I'm glad you can come on here, and I figured this was a perfect topic, so I'm glad you did, because it's obviously we have a lot of overlapping tastes, but it's also fun when they don't.
All right, so that's everything for this week. Until next time, this is Chris.
This is Anthony.
And this is Jason.
And we'll save you all a seat at the solo table. Take care.
Later, everybody.
Bye.
See ya!